This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. The question that hangs over everyone right now is, was it an I or was it a they? This in reference to, it's just so bad. I did him so bad. Words spoken by Alex Murdaugh in the trial this week. It started with lead prosecutor Creighton Waters said, when you ask the defendant about a traumatic picture that he saw of Paul and Maggie, what did he say? It's just so bad. I did him so bad, Croft responded. I did him so bad? Waters asked, yes, sir. And Croft responded, is this definitive proof of Murdaugh admitting to the murder? The audio was also played in court, and many still wondering, is the I a they or the they an I? To dive deeper into that conversation, we're joined by Anne Bremmer. Anne is a trial attorney and one of the nation's most recognized legal analysts. Anne, you've heard the audio. You've seen the testimony. Where do you stand?
I don't know. You know, I watched the court proceedings on court TV this morning on my phone, and they played it slowly. They slowed the tape down. I'm sure you heard that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the jurors are going to conclude that he said what exactly he said.
Yeah.
And if he did say it, what did he mean? And I'd like the lawyer's question. Well, it's up to the jury, you know, to determine what they heard. I can't imagine somebody that's been this sophisticated in his dealings in fraud and other potential homicides and things like that would make that kind of a slip. I mean, can you imagine that he would say, I did him bad?
I know. And that's where I'm wondering, is this just another one of those things that they say there and it's taken out of context or taken a different way than the way the rest of us would hear it? I think the argument that's being made is they did him so bad or is something of that nature. They're, the question right on the I is what seems to be asked.
Right. And they did him so bad actually makes more sense. Number one, that he wouldn't confess. Mm-hmm. And number two, he's just going, oh, my God, they did such terrible thing to my son, my family, you know. And so, well, it's going to be up to the jury for sure. But if I were the prosecutor, I wouldn't bank on that as my centerpiece of my case.
Sure. What have you made thus far out of the body language of Alex, all the way back to the police interrogation video that has been released, to his body language in the courtroom?
Well, it's interesting. You know, when you hear him on the 911 call, he's pretty sympathetic. You know, he sounds absolutely frantic, you know, shocked, all those kinds of things, upset. But then you see him looking like a lawyer, you know, in court, oftentimes and kind of stoic. But then the crying, we know when he wasn't crying with the police or anything else, it's just bizarre. Is he a good actor or you just say to the jury, the defense, people all react differently to trauma and stress. Mm-hmm. You know, we all know that. And so therefore, you can't glean anything from the way he's conducted himself in terms of his emotions vis-a-vis his guilt or innocence.
No, I completely agree. And that is one of those things where it is a different response for every human being. It just seems like dramatic swings is what we saw so much of, especially in the interrogation right video, where he goes from, you know, just inconsolable to, oh, yeah, that kid down the road, he's a good young man. It's questionable, but you're exactly right. At the same point, trauma does crazy things to people, and we all have different ways of dealing and registering that. And then, of course, the way our interpersonal reactions come out is a product of that.
Right. And I mean, even if he is guilty, and I've noted in some of the comments on the, you know, various forums that we have on this case and see, some people don't think he is already, you know, mm-hmm, even though it looks like it's an overwhelming prosecution case. And so, you know, you look at someone like him and I think, was he crying, you know, during opening statements in the initial part of the case? Because even though if he did it, he still lost loved ones. I mean, that's something to consider, too.
Yeah. And loved ones that didn't really seem to be at odds with him or him at odds with them.
Right. And so we've heard a couple motives suggested, one of which is that he wants sympathy because he had all the financial problems and potential crimes. So he wanted to get sympathy. But the other thing is to shut them up for something they knew, or to basically cover up his financial misdeeds because of the boat case and his wife wanting a divorce, supposedly, and looking at his finances and the firm's finances.
What are your thoughts on that? That motive assumption that maybe it was him trying to gain sympathy?
Wow, that's a pretty big bad way to get sympathy, isn't it? To kill two people,
yes.
Your own son and your wife. I mean, I don't buy it. I just don't think that's a plausible motive to the jury.
But the thought is, if he's not the murderer, if it was going to be pictured as someone else did this to him, that would probably gain sympathy from the public.
Huge.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, how much can a man take? I mean, here he's this prominent member of the community. His family's been, for generations prominent and respected. And then this happens to him. And what a terrible, terrible thing.
And then the supposed attempt on his own life, where he had hired someone to kill him to make it look like a murder. Obviously, that didn't work out so well.
No.
But was that another attempt? Almost one obviously succeeded with the death of his wife and his son. Was he still going down that path of let's get me sympathy? Let's make it look like there was another hit on me. Maybe this one failed and I'm still alive. But all of these things, all of his master plans end up being exposed for what they are.
Which is just crazy because he's like a one-man crime wave, with the maid and, with the wanting somebody to kill him when he's changing a tire or something, and his wife and his son, and then all the financial fraud. It's just, and then insurance fraud even with the housekeeper. Remember that piece too. And then cheating clients. It's just extraordinary what he's been able to accomplish in terms of criminal activity.
I'm curious to get your thoughts on this because I didn't really think much of it until I was asked this last night when I was on Banfield about the Gucci receipt. At first, I thought it's just people recklessly spending money that really don't have a concept of what's going on in their life. I could see it very plausible that it was his wife that maybe bought it with a separate account or spent that much money on it. And maybe it was something that added up in Alex's mind of, we're losing here. Everything is falling apart and you're still out there spending recklessly. Could that be one of the pieces in this puzzle of he knows that the people who are closest to him are now about to see the fraud that he actually is? And
yes,
there is some stress there involving that she went and spent $1,000 on whatever it was. And it was, well, I don't want to, as a narcissist, face the reality of everything I've done, especially to those who trust me and I'm supposed to be looking out for. I mean, could that have been one of the last straws of just, I can't take this, and rather than face the music from them, I'm going to take them out?
No, I think your analysis is brilliant. I think that's exactly right. I mean, it's that he can't look in their eyes and see back the admiration and love, if they've are onto him. And and so he has to take him out. Like, he's the ultimate narcissist. And I think, he couldn't bear for them to see him differently.
Yeah. It's an interesting little piece there that could mean a lot or could mean absolutely nothing at all.
Exactly. But I think, the lives that they had, it was just a house of cards, but he's the one that knew it.
And when it comes tumbling down and that you're the one responsible, but your ego won't let you take that. It's amazing the lengths that people will go to destroy everyone around them, to not feel the reality of the pain that they've caused, even though in turn,
it's like that Oscar Wilde quote, like, why does one run so quickly to their own ruin?
Yeah, it's very, very true. The defense seems to be arguing that maybe it was Paul who was the target of the attack after the boat incident and death. We obviously know that Paul was involved in that deadly boat crash. Do you think there's any legitimacy to that argument?
I'll tell you frankly, when I first heard the news about the murders, I thought maybe that was the case. I mean, just, your mind kind of goes there. That was a terrible boat accident. You had this protracted litigation. You had the criminal case pending. And people get really upset. And you think, well, maybe someone in her family just couldn't take it. but why kill the mom? You know, that piece just didn't fit. But it's something, the old Saudi defense, some other dude did it. You know, that's what they're going to try and put out before the jury for reasonable doubt.
And trying to throw in there yesterday as well, the possibility of two killers involved in this.
Two killers, two guns.
Yeah, two killers, two guns. One of the problems with that, if they're saying that maybe one was, you know, kind of sniping off from a distance, is the wounds that his wife got from literally the gun when she's so close to it. The flesh actually burns because of the extreme heat that comes out of the weapon. So it shows that she was shot at a very close range, not necessarily somewhere far away. Don't think it necessarily takes away an argument that there could possibly be two people, but let's say that maybe there were. Do you feel that possibly Murdaugh is still involved with there being two people? Maybe he couldn't necessarily do the deed himself and literally blow his son's brains across the room, but maybe hired someone to do such a thing.
Well, he's done it before, at least hiring someone to kill him. But
yeah,
it reminds me of the O.J. Simpson case, you know, when they kept saying, well, it had to be more than one person. They always said it was O.J. and his son Jason or something. And mm-hmm. to me, it's kind of defies logic that you could convince somebody to go with you to kill two people and have no trace of that, no paper trail, no evidence whatsoever. And nobody coming forward to say, you know what, I'd like to get a deal and testify against, you know, Murdaugh. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. And as a juror, I don't think it makes sense that there were two people.
From a layman's standpoint, someone who's not in a courtroom, who doesn't have any amount of experience like you do, does it feel to you like they're just really kind of throw everything out there at this moment in time, the defense of Alex Murdaugh, of just, what about this? What about that? Because maybe they don't really have a super strong defense case, but if they can sow doubt in one of God knows how many ways, that's how they're attempting to defend him.
Right. And it's like throw the spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks. I mean, I used to do that when I was a new lawyer in my small apartment. When I was broke, I would throw spaghetti at the wall and sometimes it sticks.
Sure.
You know, so yeah, I mean, that's what they're trying to do. Now, I've been impressed, though, with the defense so far, you know, in terms of some of the forensics and their examination, cross-examination of witnesses. I mean, I think they're doing a noble job.
I do too. I've actually been surprised at what they've had so far. I mean, I know we go into this knowing so much of the backstory and you almost think, oh, well, this is, you know, open and shut. But I think we get surprised quite often in cases like this. What, in your opinion, has been some of the, I'm going to ask it both ways, some of the strongest evidence to convict Alec of these crimes thus far?
Oh, geez, there's such a laundry list. I mean, the fact that he's got the t-shirt on that's like completely clean, but then he says he rolls over his son and he doesn't have any evidence of that, the ammunition that matches the shotguns, the motive, although the financial motive hasn't come in yet, but I think it will. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that the going to his mom's house, you know, as an alibi when she has Alzheimer's, I mean, that doesn't make sense. And then the text from his wife saying something's fishy, he's up to something, and but he really wants to meet her, like, you know, out by the dog kennels. I mean, there's so much of that, you know, circumstantial evidence, which is as valid as direct evidence.
Yeah.
To support a conviction. I mean, I could go on and on. I was reading a list, I think it was on the Court TV side, of all the incriminating evidence, and it was just staggering.
Yeah, it's quite staggering. And it's also interesting, too, when you look at the evidence that's out there and then match up to the statements that he was making in the interrogation with police that very night, almost leading them many ways. Like, how often does she come out here? She's out here all the time, every
night. I know.
And she's saying
every minute of every day. Yeah,
and she's saying to her friend, like, there's something up here. I don't know why he wants me to meet out here, but yeah.
I know.
He's, you know, in some ways, you know, narcissists are so interesting because they can be very cunning and very tricky, but in some cases they're almost just too close to the insanity that they don't realize how dumb and obvious the things that they say are.
No, that's very well stated. It's exactly true with him. And then he's like, he kind of has that look on his face like Alfred E. Newman, what me worry? You know, I'm just here, you know, I've got these good lawyers and it's all going to be fine. And you think, Boy, that guy is deluded.
Yeah, 100%. On the other side of the coin, what do you feel is some of the strongest evidence that the prosecution has thus far, either presented or not, to have Alec come out of this thing innocent?
Nobody can believe that someone would kill their son and their wife, especially sure. someone from such a prominent family. And I'm glad for the defense that they didn't seek a change of venue. They want to be smack dab in the community that respects this family. Mm-hmm. And so that's just, it's just something that we can't really get our arms around or our minds around that he would do that. And if the financial evidence and fraud doesn't come in, and they successfully, as I understand it, kept it out of openings. I didn't see all of openings, but you know, if they can stick it, you know, with the simple, there's just no way he would do that. And there's no motive. And people, even though you don't have to prove a motive, jurors want to know that there's a motive of some kind. And then you've got their arguments on some of the scientific evidence, you know, some of the blood evidence. And like you said, they're going to pick apart every single piece of that case. And where are the guns, you know, and how do you get rid of them? And, you know, how come there's no, you know, other, we've got, I think, the phone evidence that connect them in some ways, but, you know, no witnesses, no outcry, no nothing, you know, and why at the dog kennels? I mean, it just doesn't add up. And so I think those are the kinds of things that I'd hang my hat on in his defense.
Ann Bremner, thank you so much for your insight. Anna, trial attorney and one of the nation's most recognized legal analysts. We definitely appreciate your insight here on the program. That's going to wrap up this edition. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts just to not miss any breaking updates, discussions on the case, and more. You can also get a commercial-free experience on Apple Podcasts and even try it out for 3 days free right now. You can follow me on Twitter at TonyBPod. I'm Tony Bruschi from all of us here. Thanks for listening.